This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 671 with guest Andrew Morris, recorded on February 12th, 2026. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. And of course, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes. Andrew, I've been saying that for the longest time. You are the inventor of the word world-class show notes. Welcome back, Andrew. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Good to put a headset on for something that's not a work meeting for once.
Yeah. We'll catch up with you here in a second, but I remember the conversations we had in the early days. I was like, hey, we need some show notes. You want to help me out with that? And you're like, yeah, I think I can do that. And in a pre-show, you were just saying that was your Saturday morning routine, right? We'd record Friday for your Friday, right? And then we'd sync up sometime over the weekend, and I can't remember. I think I've almost always posted this show on Saturdays sometime.
Yeah.
But we'd sync up over the weekend, and you did that for a long time.
Talk a lot of smack about for a lot of hours back in those days.
Yeah. Well, and we'd record. It would be lunchtime for you. This was kind of the thing, and so you'd sneak away. You were in various places during those days with a headset, and you'd sneak away and do the podcast with us, you, me, Christian, at first. And then you and me for a while, Christian off and on. And then for you,
Rich and Mike Howard come in and
out. Of course. Yeah. Mike Howard and Rich join us for those years. You, the kids, that kind of stopped you from podcasting, right? I mean, give us a little update, whatever you're comfortable with. Give us a little update. Where are you at? What are you doing? What kind of things are happening? Those kinds of things.
Look, anyone who's seen me on Facebook would know where we're at. So we we decided to pick up our lives. Made the call at about two and a bit years ago. We're going to pick up our lives out of Melbourne and move up to Brisbane. So, you know, what's that? It's 2000.
You're hanging out with Rennie up there now? Is that the... You remember Rennie up in Brisbane?
Yeah. Is he in Brisbane now, is he?
Well, I thought he was always in Brisbane.
Oh, I thought he moved to Sydney. Anyway.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I kind of lost touch.
I haven't heard from Rennie in a thousand years.
So. Yeah, you and me both. So we picked up. We moved to Brisbane after we found somewhere. I wasn't overly keen on playing the rental game. Mm. So we found a place that we both liked and bought ourselves an acre and a half of land in South Brisbane. So we're back out onto a nice little woodlot that can get wallabies and kangaroos and whatnot in the backyard, which is pretty slick. Then we sold up in Melbourne and made the pilgrimage.
Nice.
Tumultuous 12 months.
Changing locations and you know, moving anytime. Didn't you have a bunch of solar on your house there in
Melbourne?
Yeah.
We got a bunch of it here too as well.
You just sell all that stuff with the house, I assume.
It's all considered a fixture. And the place we bought up here had solar on already. We got a bigger system up here but probably 3-4 weeks off putting some batteries on so that we become a bit more grid independent. And yeah, hopefully, you know, all we have to pay to the power company is the connection fee.
Yeah.
That's the ideal end game.
No, right on. It's an interesting, you know, and you're probably in a sunnier spot since I've been working with solar over the last 6 months or so. Nebraska is not an ideal solar state.
Getting your roof covered in snow for a few months a year doesn't really help, right?
No, the snow, the clouds. It's a lot hazier here. You know, when you have solar, you start really noticing every day, like, is today going to be a good solar day? You know, at least for me, that's what I'm thinking about. Maybe I'll get over it eventually, you know, but I'm always thinking, and then gets a little hazy and you're like, oh, go away, you know? And, but anyway, so, okay. So you moved, kids get relocated to school. Everything's yeah. going well from that perspective.
Yeah. So the kids have done well. They're both, pretty much straight A kids now. So, Caitlin was straight A's in Melbourne. Mm. Once she decided she wanted to be a doctor, and we told her that, you know, C's and D's weren't going to cut it to be a doctor, and she, mm-hmm. you know, something snapped in her head, and
wow,
yeah, hasn't pulled anything under an A in school wow. since. And nice. Yeah, Nathan, when we got up here, we took him out of the public education system, and he's in a private school now, and he's getting the attention he needs and good. The push to,
yeah,
you know,
good.
become sure. the kid he needs to be in yeah. order to be what he wants to do.
Yeah, good. Good. Well, that's always good. Michelle's doing well.
Yeah, she is. So she relocated part of her event management business from Melbourne to Brisbane. And because we got the Olympics coming up in 2032, mm-hmm. there's yeah. An opportunity or three up here right now. So wow.
that's, are those in Brisbane?
Yeah, they're going to be in Brisbane or throughout Queensland. So
okay.
They'll be from Brisbane to Cairns. So okay. quite mm-hmm. a quite a bit of geographical coverage.
Oh yeah, they figure it out though. They get it all done.
You know? Yeah, this is right. This is right.
Brisbane's has a new underground, right? You guys got a new metro going in or something like that, or
they're putting a railway line under the river.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're on the south side of the river, and to get the train at the moment, it's like an hour and a half to get to town versus 40 minutes on the bus.
Yeah.
And once this new line goes through under the river, it'll take us like 25 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that'd be nice. But things don't come without controversy though.
Oh, true, true. Mm-hmm. And it's a very much a city under development. Like the amount of money yeah. being spent on infrastructure investment and whatnot yeah. is just incredible. Particularly coming from a state where, you know, the money was being spent, but not necessarily in the right spot.
Well, I always got the impression about Brisbane. It's an old port town, right?
Yeah,
and,
correct.
And I always got the impression that it wanted to just be a kind of a port town. And then it got big enough. People are like, we should probably do something here.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's been a lot of catch up, right?
That was the impression I got. Yeah, look, and there's a lot of government agencies starting to move here. There's a lot of insurance companies and finance companies starting to move their base up here as well. Queensland's a big mining state as well. So, you know, a lot of all the big mining companies are in Brisbane.
Yeah. Well, and so from, I don't want to say quality of life, but you've been there long enough now.
I'm still sweating bullets all year round. today, I think today is sitting around about 80 something percent humidity.
Yeah. Much warmer, which, right? You went from a southern latitude up to a higher latitude, right?
Yeah, look, I mean, Melbourne like a couple of weeks ago had 48 degrees, mm-hmm. but foot Celsius. but they had about 30 something percent humidity. We had 24 degrees and 89% humidity.
Yeah.
So you can't move without breaking a sweat.
Oh, right on. Right, you still riding your bike?
Yeah, still riding. I've got a titanium steed these days, which was my 50th birthday present to myself.
Nice. You're not 50. Stop. You and I have not aged since we started doing this.
I don't know. The lack of hair would probably indicate otherwise. I bought myself a gravel bike for my 50th. Since we've been in Brisbane, mountain biking's a big scene up here too. So I went and bought the young man a dual suspension bike, and then realised that I couldn't keep up with him on a hardtail,
yeah.
and
yeah.
so happened to find a full carbon suspension bike for the right price, and so
nice. Cool. Well, thanks for coming back on. And, you know, it's always great to catch up after a long time, but we're a tech show. So let's talk a little bit about tech. you know, as we think about the gadgets that are around you, certainly the bike's got some stuff, but what's like, what's taken up the, you know, what's taken up the lion's share of your attention from a tech perspective? What are you spending your time with gadget wise? What's interesting to you?
What's frustrating me at the moment?
that's okay too. That's okay.
Yeah. Too. Look, I guess I'm big on media at the moment. I'm spending a lot of time in applying for work, so part of that's media consumption while you're in the air, and being a pathological tight ass, I really don't like paying for a subscription service. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of work with Plex and Jellyfin and, you know, various storage appliances, and you know, I've got a Synology NAS that's getting a bit old in the tooth, but you know, what do you do to replace it is probably the current question on everyone's lips.
It is a great question. Like, we're to that point with NAS devices that they're not new anymore. And then, so you've had a NAS or a QNAP or a home, you've got a homegrown one, maybe. But then you start thinking, I need to start thinking about the next one, right? Like, are you in a spot when you think about your Synology, do you think you'll just upgrade to the next version?
It's a good question, right? Because Synology sort of shot themselves in the foot. They had their whole hard drive thing, you know, a couple of years ago. And I think the market's lost faith in them as a result of that. Because, you know, if they decided to do a backflip on it, there's going to be people out there with drives in those enclosures they can't use. The other one for mine with the Synology, they stopped paying their codec license fees. So you don't buy a device that'll decode a 264/265 HEC codec anymore. So you know, I'm kind of looking at the Ugreen path at the moment. Thanks, Tony. Good prompt.
That was well timed. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've actually just deposited on the new Ugreen AI NAS, which is due to get launched on Kickstarter, I think, in about a month and a half, which is, I think it's like an Ultra 7. It comes with 64 gig of RAM and, you know, quite the powerhouse, and being Ugreen, it'll run anything else you wanted to as well. You disable its onboard storage and, you know, install Unraid or TrueNAS or whatever you want to do to run it.
Do you think, okay, so as we're recording this, it's February 2026, CPU and RAM prices are out of effing control, right? Like, I have never seen this kind of market before, right? I mean, we've seen some weird things with faked DRAM, you know, shortages in Singapore, whatever, right? Thailand. We've had these stories before. What's going on right now is just legit, right? You can't
get it's ridiculous. Whatever.
Yeah. So if you were going to do, I mean, I think from a NAS, you're buying something like Ugreen, which is funny because I tried the Ugreen battery when it came out. It didn't really work well for me. I had to send it back. Yep. But you go with something like QNAP or Ugreen, or, you know, a lot of this community is turned off by what Synology did. So a lot of folks are like, not going back to Synology, right? You think home build, but like,
then you got to maintain it.
Yeah. And if you're buying new, it's impossible. You're talking about $1,000 NAS device, you know, just in the hardware.
Yeah. Well, right? I think this thing's even like 1400 US. So by the time I land it in Australia, it's going to be over $2,000.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that, right? You've got something that's more than capable for what you want to do with it. Ugreen aren't selling into Australia yet either. So you're kind of restricted to buying off Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because then by you guaranteed you're going to get the thing delivered.
Right. Right. And how, okay. So, you know, we've seen this when we think about batteries or even these NAS devices or in my world, these batteries, right, that are coming straight out of the Chinese market, right? Mm-hmm. Are you, are, is, is some of that making it to Australia as we think of the EcoFlows and the Japanese? Oh, yeah, are those making it there?
Yeah, our market's pretty similar in product lineup now. Okay. When you say the Jackeries and EcoFlows, you mean like your little battery in a box?
The batteries. Yeah, the battery boxes. Kind of
the portable things, yeah. Right. Yeah, so we get pretty much all the same product line. It's just got a different plug on it.
Okay, but no U-Greens, you're not getting, those aren't being...
Only the little portable, you know, thing about the size of your cell phone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Your power bricks.
Yeah. So, well, and then I don't know if you've been following the price of hard drives too.
Oh, it's all mental. The whole thing's just gone through the roof. I mean, you spend what? Say you buy a cheap NAS out here, which is you're still looking down the barrel of about, I want to say about $2,000 for something with six drives in it. You then go and start buying drives and you're up for $600 a drive to buy 12 terabytes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to go much bigger, because if you lose one and you lose your data pool, and the next thing you've just lost, God knows how much, because recovery has a magic point, I think, for any form of RAID.
But do you think we're in a spot, I mean, as we're waiting, because it's everything passes, right? Everything happens. It gets nuts. People fled to the market. New products come in. Prices come down. So this won't be forever, but do you think you're thinking about building a new NAS? And I know a lot of the listeners here are in the same spot you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of like, okay, what's going to be the next version of storage? Do you think we look at used PC stuff and cobble something together for the next 3 to 5 years and wait for this to kind of flush itself out?
Yeah, it's a bit of six one half a dozen the other, isn't it? I mean, I think if you go down the PC grade hardware, like, I mean, at the moment I'm running Seagate Iron Wolves, the 8 terabyte model in my current NAS. Haven't had a failure. Haven't had a single error.
No, if they made it this far, they're going to make it a while.
Yeah, and I think 8 terabytes on the dollar at the moment is the sweet point. Mm-hmm. I think if you go to 12, that's not quite. It's fairly similar out in Australia, but you go any bigger than that and the price is stupid.
Yeah.
But I think if you go down the desktop hardware line, I think they're not designed to run 24/7. They're not energy efficient. They're noisy. I mean, my thing sits in a cupboard, so I don't hear it, and it's in a hallway. But even so, you know, where do you? Everything has a point of balance, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not entirely sure where it is yet either, for that matter.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. The other day, you know, as I've been working through the solar stuff, you know, I went the route where once I started working with solar, I thought, how can I shut everything off?
Yep.
right. So I'm just like, and then I turned off the miner. You know, I had a Chia miner going with some hard drive stuff, and they're trying to figure out a new format. So I just shut that off, and then started shutting down all the exterior stuff. And then I was like, I don't know if I need this Unraid server. Like, I'm running my NAS is Unraid. It's in a Core i7 box from 2019. Geez. It's probably 11 years old now, maybe 10. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got, 5 3-terabyte hard drives in it that just keep running. They've run this far. They're going to keep running a while. By the way, two of them have, smart errors on them. So, you know, I'm just going to keep running it. It'll be fine. There's some parity on the thing, so we can recover them if we need to.
So the time bomb started to tick, basically.
Oh, it's been ticking all the time. But I started thinking, Andrew, and seriously, I thought, do I need this running 24/7? I'm not a data center, for God's sakes. Do I need it running at night when I'm sleeping? Do I need it running during the day when I'm at work? I'm not accessing files from it, but, you know, now, in your case, you're traveling, and maybe some of those things are true. But do we really need them running 24/7?
I think when I looked at my Plex this morning, I think there was about 30 people streaming off it.
Okay, well, all right.
So,
all right. Yeah.
you know, to that, to that end, I guess there's a degree of yes.
But you do. You do.
I don't know. I also tend to think with that sort of enclosure-based storage, if you turn it off, the chance of it not coming back on is greater.
Yeah. You're probably right.
You know, the whole mean time between failure things, particularly with that high life cycle storage. I know in the enterprise it's designed on it never being turned off.
Right, right.
So to me, it extrapolates out. I mean, I'm not worried about the cost of energy, not for that device. I've got other stuff in the house that for sure gets turned off.
50 watts. It's 50 watts, right? I mean, this is the crazy thing about, but when you're measuring these things like all the time,
it all adds up.
Yeah, well, yes, but it's also, it's one of those weird things that 50 watts is like 50 of something. It literally costs, you know, 50 cents a day, maybe, if you're maybe 25 to run this thing, right? It's super cheap, but it's compared to everything else. You know, you start to run this process, you're like, well, how can I get all my computers down to, you know, 15 watts, right? Or whatever. So I do listen to your point about turning things on and turning things off and them not restarting, I think is legitimate, right? There's a lot of stress put on a hard drive every time you start it, right?
Yeah, I think there's an element of it. I guess it sort of leads you into the how do you do your turn, your power cycling too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that keeps me sleepless is Home Assistant. And I think everyone in this community eventually goes down that rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the home automation, whether you're building dashboards to show you what the weather looks like, or you're actually, you know, installing a switch behind every, a smart switch behind every light outlet, and you know, all your lamps have got a smart bulb in them, and they turn themselves on and off with the sun, and all that type of jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went down that rabbit hole about 8 years ago.
Well, as you say, in the new house, did you move in and inherit some home automation, or are you putting new stuff in, or how's that working?
I inherited 3 Unify access points.
Oh, we talked about Unify a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so I inherited 3 of them that weren't even running off a Unify network controller. They were just running off a PoE injector, and then you walked around the house, and if you had a Wi-Fi analyzer app running, you'd go from the living room out to the front hallway, and you'd see it go boom, boom, disconnects and come back up again. So, yeah, that got changed.
Okay. So did you bring stuff with you?
No, I was running ASUS hardware in Melbourne.
Okay.
With their Wi-Fi mesh, and given there were access points mounted on the ceiling and whatnot already, I went and bought a UCG Max, which is the Cloud Gateway Max. And I've got a 7-port PoE switch behind it.
Okay.
And then the long game is that every television and point where people work off a computer will have a Flex Mini in that location, which is the 5-port PoE.
Mm.
So, you know, plug in a Google TV or plug the TV straight in with a Plex client running on it, or whatever the case may be. A little bit more structured.
Yeah. Well, a little enterprise there, right? Like home enterprise. That needs to be a term. Like, I think it's the home enterprise, right? Because we have that weird mix where we're talking about Unify a couple weeks ago, and you know, the question was, you know, is this viable? I think Uncle Marv was hanging out with me. And, you know, is that viable today? And is that the way to go? And blah, blah, blah. But we sometimes treat our home networks like they're the enterprise in some regard, right? And so, you know, you're like, how much do we want to take to these endpoints? Then how much management do we want to do on the backside to, because you can spend an infinite amount of time managing all this stuff.
Oh, 100%. Look, I think if you go for, In the Unify situation, if you go for the a solid state brain, so you're not running your network manager somewhere else. Like I was running it on my home assistant NUC, and it was a pain in the ass. There's no way of boiling that one down. Since I've gone into the single control plane, it becomes a lot better. You know, as our security cameras die, I'll replace them with Unify Ubiquiti cameras. It's got an NVMe 2 TB drive in it. You know, I can use that for storage. I can then tie it into things like Frigate and, you know, a bunch of other, I don't want to use it but at the term, but AI smarts that'll tell me what's happening in and outside the house. I'll never install a camera in the house, but you know, to know what's happening outside, you know, a man in a white car pulled up to the front gate and he got out and he was wearing a blue shirt, you know, that can be kind of handy if something happens after the fact.
right. Yeah, the only one I put in my house is in my garage, and that's so I can see if my garage door's down. That's kind of and by the way, I have a Miros controller on my garage door. It will tell me if it's up or down.
But it's cool to have a camera.
I want to know, is it up or down kind of thing. By the way, Joe said back to the hard drives real quick. He said that my hard drives on my Unraid box spin down, but all my Dockers run from SSDs. Hey, Andrew, and when you think about some of the work that you're doing with we're talking about spinners, but are we at a spot? I mean, do you think most people, when I say people, I mean us.
Like us.
Us tech enthusiasts, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we just be solid state all the way around?
I can't afford it.
You don't think so?
No, I can't afford it.
How much storage do you need?
I've currently got 21 terabytes and I'm running out of space.
I'm not
the average guy anymore though, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm hearing from listeners of this show, I think the most of the storage is coming in the form of media, right? And it sounds like, is most of that 21 terabytes media? Pictures?
Yeah. No, they're not pictures. I think the library at the moment's amassing about 2,000 movies and
Movies, yeah.
18,000 odd TV episodes.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's ever increasing. You know, someone sends you a message and says, "Can you please locate me a copy of blah?"
Yeah.
And you know, if it's on the appropriate sources, then you can find it, right?
But you're almost a media host provider then at that point. If you have that many people requesting, they're requesting stuff to record. So, you know,
look at the end of the day though. At the end of the day though, if I cut off external access, no one would care.
Say you cut off access. What do you think your storage requirement needs would be then?
Oh, it'd still be the same because they're the TV shows and movies that we watch as a family.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. And you're keeping everything forever. It's the kind of, I'm going to record it once, even if we never watch it again.
Yeah, I'm a data hoarder.
You're a hoarder.
Look at the bookcase of crap over my left shoulder. It hasn't changed since I was in Melbourne.
Yeah. Okay. So you can't get away with SSD. You're going to need some spinners. That being said, spinners, I mean, yes, as we're talking about, I mean, prices have gone back up, but you're in a situation, 21 terabytes is still pretty doable from a storage perspective. So,
I'm just having a little look online while we're talking. I mean, you can buy an 8 terabyte NVMe at the moment in Australia for about $1,400. So if you went solid state, it's crazy, but it's not ridiculous, depending on your income.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're going to, in your scenario, you're helping friends, or even let's just say you're not, it's your family video, right? It's your family stuff.
It's all my Linux ISOs.
Some spinners are just fine right out there. They're easy to replace. You can run them, you know, if you do say you did need to expand or you did need to replace an 8 terabyte hard drive. Yeah, they're $300 or $400 for whatever, right? And maybe that's a US price. But you can do it. It's not impossible. Joe makes a good point in chat, and I'll ask you about this, these AI data centers. You're a little bit in that space, but he says in a couple of years when the AI data centers turn over their hardware, we'll be running enterprise SSDs, hopefully cheap. Andrew, any thoughts on, in the space you're in, any thoughts? Is that, do you think we have some fallout coming a couple years from now?
It's already
happening. There may be surplus equipment we may be able to get our hands on.
It's already happening in Australia. I'm not sure about the US. Yeah, you know, if you jump on Marketplace at the moment, you can pick yourself up like something like a Nutanix cluster or Nutanix host with probably 100 terabytes of storage in it for under $5,000.
Okay.
And it's all rotating Rust with a couple of NVMEs in it, but you know, it'll do the trick. You got to jump on quickly. But if you buy something like that for say $5,000, assuming you've got a rack at home in your domestic data center, well, you know, you can heat your house for life. And but you never, and if a disk fails, so what? You throw it in the bin.
Right. I think what a lot of folks are thinking is this, you know, as we get to the next, like all this data center stuff is going in. And I don't know if we know exactly how much equipment is actually going in. Like there's a lot of talk of this, of like, oh yeah, we're building data centers at a breakneck pace. And I'm kind of wondering, like, I wonder how much of that is real. Like maybe there's a lot of pencil whipping going on at this point. I mean, certainly we're building data centers, right? And things are happening.
Oh, they're building an awful lot of floor space.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. How much of the equipment is actually going in? And then you start thinking like, because everybody's short everything. I mean, it came on so fast. And then, you know, once the stuff comes to a grinding halt, then nobody can get anything, you know, kind of deal. So you kind of wonder if, you know, we could be in a perfect bubble situation where all this equipment's backed up. There's this huge demand. Everybody races to meet it. The AI bubble bursts. Then there's less demand. And then all of a sudden, there's all this equipment. And on the backside of this thing, all these things that are expensive, CPUs, GPUs, memory, and drives, could, and especially SSDs, because they're not for AI. They're using SSD or NVMe, right?
And not
spinners. This isn't data center stuff. This is actual storage of LLMs, which you don't want to have it on drive, right? So, yeah, we could a couple years on the backside of this thing, we could see some real windfalls.
I have no doubt. And you know what? That class of storage will probably work in your average, domestic machine without having to go and buy funky adapters and HBA cards and all the jazz that you do for that rotating Rust that people are picking up now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there'll be, you know, a lot of that stuff is, I mean, they themselves are picking up consumer like equipment to put, because that's what's available.
Yeah, right.
And so they're jamming that stuff in, and then eventually they'll be like, oh, we better get rid of this stuff. Fire sale. Get it out of here. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think the key difference, really, it's like the days of old, you know, what makes an A-class memory stick or an A-class NVMe is it how they test it on the bench when it comes off the production line. You know, it's kind of, I think that's a large part of it, right? When LG makes a TV panel, what makes it LG or Samsung or, you know, go to one of the lower brands that they provide panels to? It's got to be the quality of it when they test it.
Yeah, when they test it. And then it goes down a path. Okay, that's this path, and then this one's path B, and this one's path C. And I think we could be in a situation, right, where the stuff's going to get used fairly hard, but fairly fast. And the stuff that doesn't work will be ferreted out. It'll fail. They'll toss it. And the stuff that makes it through, you know, if you can pick up some of the stuff for 30% on the dollar,
let's face it, it's going to end up in the auction houses.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
So it's just a matter of keeping your eye on the.
I think so. It's discouraging now, though, right? It's discouraging for people.
It's a pain in the ass.
These PC builders are out there and they're like, they want $4,000 for this memory. You know, when I built out, I have a, by the last Windows PC I built out, right? It's a Ryzen 5. It's got a 3060 GPU in it, which, you know, it's $400 at the time. I could probably pick up that 3060 now for under $400. So that's not there. But the memory, I got 128 gig of RAM. I could sell that RAM today.
For more than you pay for the whole PC.
Pay for the whole thing. You know, now the PC wouldn't be usable. But, you know, you're like, and I've kind of taken the approach like, well, I'm going to hold on to this box and use it because it's paid for. It was fairly inexpensive when I bought it, and I'm just going to try and get as much mileage. Do you think for the average guy, Andrew, that that's kind of the stance we kind of need to take is like, hey, we need to, let's push some of this equipment just as far as we can, knowing we got to have a backup plan for some of it, but maybe we stretch out the equipment life.
That's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to run my gear down until it's unusable.
Yeah.
And then I think you're going to end up buying almost a brand name. I think it'll get to a point where rolling your own becomes cost ineffective. I'm looking, even now I've just come out of the enterprise world after 30 odd years. I've got to grow up and buy a laptop, you know. Mm-hmm. Or another computer. You know, I'm using a micro PC as we speak, which I picked up for $150 at a clearing sale. It's a current model. It's got a Core i5 15 something in it, 32 gig of RAM and a 256 gig NVMe. Mm-hmm. Does what I need to do as a daily driver. It runs Office, it runs Windows. Right. I can run a few VMs on it if I want to. But yeah, it's a hard one because everything's going up in price, and it's not commensurate with anything that anyone earns.
Right.
You know, we at work the other day, we replaced a motherboard in a machine that's used for processing drone footage, and the thing's got 2 terabytes of RAM in it. And I'm sitting there, I'm pulling these DIMMs out, and I'm going, holy shit, this is worth more than my car.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And those prices went up so fast. This kind of reminds me a little bit. You're a little bit younger than me, but this kind of reminds me of the 80s when PCs were new. And, you know, we were just starting to come out with, you know, I think about the 84, 86, 87, 88, those timeframes. And man, the PCs were expensive. Now, part of it was just the manufacturing wasn't there. And so, you know, you didn't have it. But these prices kind of remind me. So the conditions are different. I get that. The conditions are different. Or are they?
Like, it's Moore's law, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, my first PC, which I bought in, I think it was 84, 85, cost me just shy of $4,000 for a 386. You know, I had a 32.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good deal.
I think it was like a 32 meg hard drive or something like that. I can't remember what size the driver was, but it had virtually no memory. And it had a 5.25-inch floppy because I couldn't justify the 3.5.
Yeah. Well, no, for sure. But the reason those were so expensive is because the manufacturing, the stuff we needed, right, wasn't there. I'm kind of wondering if the demand has reset. Like, if the demand is so high for these things, it's reset the manufacturing. We just don't have enough manufacturing locations. Especially well, you this guys, AI, you know.
Well, so. You guys are also getting fingered by the whole tariff thing too, aren't you?
For sure we are. Yeah, for sure we are. Yeah, we are.
I mean, I can buy. I'm sure that the motherboard I can buy for $500 is going to cost you guys $650.
Yeah.
You know, so that doesn't help either. Source of origin is always going to be a killer at the moment.
Well, but that motherboard should be $100 or $150 because for all of us, right? It's just got me wondering if we're not in a great reset for manufacturing. And all of a sudden, you know, listen, manufacturing on the tech side has never been better until it wasn't. Like that all of a sudden in the last year, because of AI, we went from having enough to not enough.
Quickly. To none.
Yeah. You know, and so you just, it's almost like a great reset on prices, right? And we're seeing these astronomical prices like we saw in the 80s. Now, that corrected itself. A bunch of people got in. We figured that out. Prices got cheap. You know, it cheap enough that in the late 90s, early 2000, we had the whole AOL giving away PCs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was right. I mean, so that cycled around to it. So I often wonder what this new demand, and if it sticks, what this new demand will do to manufacturing, because we may have to see, well, and do we have enough materials to create, like, are there enough of materials on the planet?
Is there enough silicon in the world?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. It really does make you wonder, right? You're like, hey, this is all this demand is awesome, but is there enough, are there actually enough raw materials in the world to make these things at this level? You know,
probably encourages innovation to find the next thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? You're right. You're right. I mean, maybe this is the 80s where we stopped thinking about, you know, capacitors and resistors, and we started thinking about silicon, right? Yeah. Tony says, now we know what it's like to be Australian or Canadian. And that's kind of true, right?
I don't know. We still get the wrong end of the pineapple as well. So don't.
Yeah. It's a different scale, right? I mean, as we think about 340 million Americans, and
it's still a pineapple. We just don't get the end with the green bits. I have the green stuff on it.
Sorry, that was funny. Yeah, well, but the scale's different in Australia than it is in the United States, right? And same in Canada, right? Scale's a little bit different from that standpoint. You mentioned Ubiquity Unify. Do you think we're like, you know, that this may be an area as we're thinking about PCs and storage and CPU and GPU is expensive. Is this the time to really start looking at networking gear? Because that doesn't seem to be as affected by all of this craziness in a lot of ways. And if I was going to upgrade, is now the time, do you think?
I think the time is right to upgrade your networking gear when you need to do it.
Okay.
You know, I did mine purely through necessity.
Right.
Otherwise, if we'd moved into this new house and it didn't have the Unify gear on the roof, I just would have put my existing hardware somewhere else in the house. You know, we moved in, it had a crappy TP-Link modem on a gigabit connection. It was pulling about 180 meg. I put my Asus one in and it went straight to a gigabit. You know, it's all relative to requirement, I think. We're lucky and unlucky here at the moment in Australia. When they deployed our national broadband network, there was a lot of copper that they had to recycle and reuse and adaptive technology to make it work with what people had to their homes. I think when we spoke, when I was still in Melbourne, we'd just upgraded to fiber at that house that we're in. And, you know, we went from 100 megabit connection to a gigabit connection. And the house that we're up here, in Brisbane, you know, we've got a gigabit down and we've got 100 meg up. And it runs pretty solid at that all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But that equally cost me $130 a month.
Oof.
Yeah. Yes. So what's that? That's $90 US about.
Yeah. 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 And actually there's some parts of the country here in the United States, they're paying that right now. That's pretty, I mean, we talk about, I get 500 down and 100
probably 500 up.
no, but I'm on T-Mobile wireless internet and it's good enough. It's $50. It's good enough. I'm not in a spot where I need all that much more up. You know, I get 85 to 100 up in most cases, 500 to 600 down, kind of depends on how the wind's blowing. in, you know, you right, and you, and it's just good enough. I don't know if I need a full, if I don't need, yeah, you know,
for yeah, I kind of feel that I could wind ours back now that I'm not at home and working at home.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll wind it back. I just don't need the grief.
Yeah. No. Right on.
And I saved, and the reality is, I save $10 a month.
Yeah.
Over a year, no.
You're fine. Anything under 100 is actually pretty good at this point, right? I think when we think about it, we're going to get a whole bunch of people that watch this show or that'll be like, no, I got it for 45, or I got it for 35, right? Or I'm doing this for 75. I think that, you know, we're, at least from a broadband perspective, we're all in that 50 to 100 category for the most part.
What about Starlink? What's the uptake for Starlink?
Well, that's like a good question. That's a great question. I don't know. Like we here in the U.S., Starlink is pretty much just a rural. I shouldn't say it just is, because I'll get a whole bunch of comments like, "No, I'm in the middle of the city and I got Starlink." Right? It is very rural, though. A lot of rural folks use it, you know, when they don't have access to. Now, Nebraska is the king of rural, right? I mean, we have Omaha. And then everything else is rural. Well, Lincoln, our capital, but you know, so I'm sure, I mean, there, I'm sure some of that is going on, but.
We use it at work, working in a coal mine now, you know, when you're out in the middle, out in a dirty big hole and you need the internet for something. Most of our techs have got a Starlink mini in the truck. Is it a great experience? Some days it's awesome. Some days you get, you know, 600 megabits down. Other days you get 50.
Just depends where the satellite is, right?
Oh, I think it's more what the heat shimmer looks like. It doesn't respond well to heat shimmer. Like last week it was 45 degrees where we were trying to use Starlink and it was quicker to use a cell phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it makes sense.
But the convenience of it is phenomenal. You know, I can take one back to my camp and throw it outside my bedroom door if I need the internet.
Yeah.
And I've got 150 megabits coming down. Not that I want to be doing that, but if there's, you know, a reason that I need the internet for something, grab it out of me, and there it is. Yeah.
Get you out of a pinch. Yeah, for sure. I was checking Starlink here. They say service starts at $50 a month.
And, yeah, it's about the same here.
Yeah. Their max speed is 120. This is US prices, right? This is Nebraska prices. 200 down is 80, and then 100 is 50.
Yeah, I haven't had a look at what it is here. We pay stupid prices for it through work, but
I wouldn't, if for me, I wouldn't have any need for it. Although it, you know, in all, Andrew, in all the talk that I had about getting Wi-Fi out to my shed, you know, for the longest time, I was trying to get Wi-Fi to the shed in the backyard. And I realized at the end of the day, the problem was the laptop that I was using to try and get the Wi-Fi in the shed was too old. And as soon as I took a new laptop out there, it connected everything in the house just fine. And I was like, it wasn't even a problem, you know? So, you know, you're like, well, you gotta take into account the gear that you're using to access the, you know, to access the stuff. But,
Us, I'm just looking here. So 100 gigabytes of data on Starlink Roam is about $80.
Okay. Yeah.
Where's starts at about $70 a month for residential.
Yeah. I think we're in that age of $50 to $100 for most people, right? Mm. If you want, certainly there's edge cases and folks getting it cheaper and folks getting it a little more expensive, but I think we're kind of around that spot. It kind of varies by region to region based on what the competition is and what you have and what you have access to and some of those kinds of things. We're in a spot here in Bellevue where I live that they've been promising to run fiber out here for the last 5 years. In fact, right before the pandemic, they came out and sprayed down all the sidewalks to, you know, the markings.
Mark the surprise, yeah.
We're coming, right? And then nothing. And I don't think it was the pandemic, but I just remember I walked around during the pandemic, I walked around the neighborhoods a lot, right? So I was getting exercise. Yeah. And I saw, you know, there's all these markings. And I was like, well, guess they're going to start tearing it up. My sidewalk is kind of a mess. So I was kind of hoping they'd tear it up and then fix it, kind of deal. And no, we ended up not getting any fiber options. It's why I went with T-Mobile Wireless. So I was like, and that has actually been really good for me. Like, now part of it is I literally have a tower one block away. So yep. I'm sitting underneath the tower. It could not be any easier, right? And so it's been, for the most part, now I say that over the last two podcasts, I've had problems where I've dropped during the podcast over the last two. Yep. And so I say that with intrepidation. I haven't dropped yet here tonight. So I don't know, maybe they're listening to me. But, you know, I kind of wonder, would you go, like, you know, I'm not Starlink, but I'm wireless. Would you go wireless if you thought it was in your area, if it was good enough?
If I had to, it'd be a challenge. Okay. I mean, just on the mobile phone, we've got, you know, about one bar of signal.
Okay. Yeah. You're not close enough.
Oh, we're close. It's at the end of the street. It's just a shit scent. It's just a really shit connection.
Yeah. Okay.
Whether it means that all their concentrators are pointing in the opposite direction or what it is, I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, we had a cyclone go through about this time last year, took the power out pretty much everywhere. When that tower ran out of power, just bend over, that's kiss it. Your ass goodbye. two 12-year-olds in the house, you know, who are used to sitting there on the phone and the doom scroll happening, and it's like, what are we going to do, Dad? Yeah. It's really just become a you problem. Pick up a book.
Get out the cards, kids. Let me teach you pinochle.
Yeah, pick up a book.
Joe out in chat says the federal grants covered the spray paint, and that was about it. Yeah, I was definitely surprised we didn't the service. I think what they did, to be honest, is there was a lot of pre-sale stuff going on. We got like flyers in the mail. Like I could have use them to insulate my house. We got so many of them. And then I was like, then I don't think enough people just took them up on there, you know, there were not enough pre-sales. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to cover that area if there's not going to be enough pre-sales. We're in a hard spot. We're in an old part of town. And so we're in a hard spot to get to. And a lot of companies don't want to come out. You know how it is, the new, you know, when they're laying cable in a new neighborhood.
They throw the fiber in the trench next to it. Yeah,
they do. Yeah, they do. And it's just easy enough. We just got notified today. I got a postcard. Our electricity provider, OPPD here, Omaha Public Power District, they're gonna put in a brand new substation for us. So we had massive floods in 2020 or in 2019, and down on the river. Exposed some real problems and not problems for the residents, problems for the Air Force base. Let's just be real clear. The Air Force base is what had some problems, right? But the utility is like, oh yeah, the residents, we're going to take care of you guys. There's a new substation coming in for you. So there have been some, you know, they got to do, they're a public utility, so they got to do, you know, all these open meetings and come and hear about what's going on. And I thought maybe when I first got the postcard, I thought maybe, because we're in the old part of town, so the wires are, you know, in our backyard. I thought maybe they're going to bury the cables. No, they're never going to bury the cables. We want to make your energy more reliable. Well, bury my cable and that would make it more reliable.
Get it on the ground. Yeah, absolutely.
What they really meant was we want to make it more reliable for the Air Force base that's nearby. So that's coming here to Nebraska as well. Andrew, gadget wise, anything besides, I mean, we've talked a lot about the networking stuff, but anything else that's catching your fancy right now from a gadget perspective?
Oh, look, I mean, I guess the health kick, well, the desire for a health kick, has me wearing a fairly recent Garmin. You know, I'm using a gun. What is it? An FX 2. So it's a couple of years old now, but you know, it does what I want it to. It's got a nice shiny yellow band. So the important things in life.
It looks impressive, right?
See, look at that.
That's a nice look. That's a nice. Do you? What feature or features do you find yourself using the most?
Look, at the moment, I'm probably using it more for sleep tracking than anything else.
Valid. You know, at our age, dude, that's valid.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, show me anyone when you're in your 50s whose wife doesn't tell you you snore. Uh-huh. You know, I've never heard me snoring, so I call that plausible deniability, right?
Yes. I've never heard me snore, says every guy post 40 or maybe younger.
Yeah. So yeah, look, there's that. I do use I'm in pretty heavily in the Garmin ecosystem, so I use a Garmin 1040 Solar on both bikes when I'm out riding. So on the mountain bike, it does some really cool stuff. It tracks the amount of air that you get while you're jumping, and
really,
yeah, it tells you. It tells me at the end of a ride, it'll tell me how much air time I've had.
And then does it say you're effing crazy at the?
That's me when I look at it. That's me when I look at it. Guy, don't you realize that you break?
You snore at night and you're trying to get air.
Okay. We kind of live in a mountain bike mecca where we are. So the nearest trailhead is probably a 5-minute drive away.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, when the weather's amenable, I'll pick, you know, Nathan up from school. We'll you'll come home, get him changed, and we're on the bikes in 10 minutes.
That's nice.
And go and smack out 45 to an hour worth of riding and back home. On the road bike, I'm using one of these, which is it's an older model now, but it's a Garmin Varia, which is a radar satellite. So if I'm on the road, it tells me what's coming up behind me, how fast it's coming.
Oh.
And whether I should be getting the hell out of its way.
Okay. How does it tell you that?
It's got a radar built into it, and it links back to my Garmin headset.
Okay. Okay.
So you then get like a little thing go up the side of the screen on the bike computer that shows you what's coming up behind.
It doesn't say move left.
No, like it'll tell you that you got three cars coming behind, and one of them's doing 70 kilometers an hour.
And you're like, get over.
Yeah.
Wow, like, that's kind of cool. I didn't realize they were getting some of that kind of radar stuff out there for you to.
Yeah,
because that's a big problem, right? That's a big problem.
I reckon I've had that one 4 years now.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, the new stuff's even better. The new stuff is a lot more selective about telling you what cars are where and what they're doing. But, you know, it's still pretty cool. I've probably had 4 or 5 occasions now where it's more or less told me get the hell out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if it goes red, they're going too fast.
Yeah. You're like, I'm dead at this point. Like, oh, well. The Garmin headquarters are just down the street. No, I shouldn't say down the street. They're in Kansas City, right? Which is not far from us down here. And so for the longest time, a lot of the college grads would head down there and work for them and the work they're doing. And, you know, we've gotten so hooked on, I shouldn't say hooked, but the Apple Watch has been so popular. I think some of the Garmin watches have been sleepers. Like there's some, really,
some good gear out there.
Garmin gear, for sure.
You didn't hand in your man card and go Apple, did you?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did for a long time. I'm on a Series 4. I have committed to this watch until it dies. Like I'm not. There's been some new ones that have done some stuff, but I'm kind of like, no, I paid a lot of money for this thing. I'm going to wear this thing until it absolutely.
Listen, if you would, I'm the same with this.
I know you got a couple grand into that watch that's right there. The it's so funny. Before smartwatches, if you would have told me I was spending $5,000 or $6,000 or $1,000 on a watch, I'd have been you're crazy. Yeah. I was buying, $50 Casio or whatever watches, right? Kind of thing. I just wasn't a watch guy. Oh my geez. Now, yeah. Well, and they'd last forever. I mean, I still have some watches. I got an award at Gallup and they gave me a watch and that thing's never going to break.
Wear it.
I do have to wear it. That's true. That's true. And you can't wear two,
And it'll never break in a box.
So it's frustrating though. This thing has been, it's a Series 4 and I think I've had it, 6 years, 7 years now, maybe.
It's pretty solid.
I think so.
Doesn't charging it every single day piss you off?
No. Yeah. So the charger's down here on the desk.
Yep.
And before I go to bed, I throw it on the charger and I go, it's not in. And then I take my phone with me and my phone's the alarm clock, right? And so that's the phone goes off at 6 a.m. every morning and I wake up and do my thing. And so, no, that doesn't bother me. I've tried, Andrew, I tried buying those things where it's a phone and the watch and the earbud chargers all in one. And it you can put the phone laying it down on the side and it becomes a clock kind of thing,
Where everyone needs it, right?
I hate that. I put my phone upside down. I don't even have a charger in my room anymore. I'm not charging my phone overnight when it gets charged in the car when I go to work or on the car on the way home or it's on the charger on the desk right here. At night, upside down, boom. I don't need to, I don't want to know what time it is. I need to be sleeping.
And the people who you need to call, you can get through. You do not disturb, right?
They can't even get through. They're screwed. If they call me while I'm sleeping, they're screwed. I don't even have that set. I have no idea. Nobody can get a hold of me when I'm sleeping. I'm sleeping. Listen, I had such a hard time during the pandemic. I had such a hard time sleeping that now that I've kind of figured it out, post pandemic, I'm actually getting some sleep now. You're like, no, you can't interrupt me. There's nothing that, and maybe the kids,
whatever.
But anyway, so, are you mostly in the Garmin ecosystem then for your bike, headset?
Yeah, watch, everything. GPS. Even the GPS in the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good place to be. We were both in the Fitbit ecosystem. The kids were in the Fitbit, are in the Fitbit ecosystem, mostly because of the price of the device. But we both found that we were getting maybe a year and a half to 2 years out of the unit before the battery had just completely shit itself.
They're just garbage.
But for a 11, 12 year old kid, they're perfect. We went through the Amazfit bands off AliExpress. You pick one of them up for $20. And they're pretty solid. Michelle's rocking an original venue, the Garmin. And I've had a Fenix 6, which died, and they warrantied it for this one. So,
yeah, Joe says he's got that venue too, and it's around 3 years old. Still gets 3 days battery life. I was always super impressed with Garmin's battery life. They seem to get that right.
This thing's 2.5 years old. Because I got it pretty much when it came out. I use it for sleep. I do SPO tracking at night. So your blood oxygen levels.
Yeah.
Which they reckon is, it shows you.
But what do you do with that data, Andrew? So you get it, but are you doing something with it?
I look at it and I try to correlate it to how I feel the next day. I was originally using the Fitbit. Don't know if you remember, back when I was trying to get my migraines under control, we were trying to correlate sleep pattern to migraine.
Yeah.
And every single day I had an IFFT macro that had gone pick up my Garmin sleep data, put it into a spreadsheet on Google Sheets, and then I'd go through, and if I had a migraine, I'd put a tick next to it, and then you'd look at the graph and write, that was a shit night's sleep, tick, there was a migraine. Now I use it probably more to get a bit of correlation between how I feel the next day and how I slept.
Okay. Yeah, I need to do something. I probably should be checking my sleep just to be, and I could wear this when I sleep, but I don't like it. I don't want anything on my arms, you know. Ed Sullivan, who's been on the show before, he's got that, is it Whoop or Swoop?
Oh, yeah, Whoop. Yeah.
Whoop?
So Whoop? Yeah, that's just a band.
Yeah, it's just a band. And I've thought about going that. I've thought about, you know, it's a subscription, you know, it's like $250 a year or something like that. Good thing. You just buy it, it's annual, you pay a subscription. I don't know if I want to know. Like, I think I know how bad my sleep is. It took me, like, I can watch on my, on the data that's on my phone during the pandemic and post-pandemic, 2023, 5 hours. So, like, 2021, say 2020, 2021, 4 hours every night. Like, I couldn't, I just couldn't sleep anymore. And then it goes to five in 2023, six in 2024. 7.5 to 8 in 2025. Like, I've been doing so much better. So from that perspective, I kind of know, like, oh yeah, you know what? My sleep is a lot better. I go to bed earlier. I've been getting in bed by 10. I've been getting up at 6. I've been getting that 8 hours, right? But I don't know. I don't know if I want to know more than that. Because, like, I'm sure I am ripping the paint off the walls. You know? I'm sure sometimes I do wake myself up. And I'm like, oh, was that me? Or was that the dog growling
in the hole?
You know, you're like, what was that? Where did that sound come from? Yeah, it's a challenge. But that's just why I ask you, like, are you doing something with the data? Because I'm afraid I'd get it, and then I'd be like, well, yeah, I know already.
Look, I have a certain female in my life who is trying to get me to go do a sleep study at the moment. So, I really don't want to sleep. I don't really, really don't want to CPAP. I'd rather sleep in a different room.
That's where I've gone. Yeah. I just sounds like, I'm just going to go to a private room and not bother anybody except me. You know, but
no one wants to go to bed looking like Darth Vader. Let's face it.
It's so hard. We got to get better at this. Like, this is the sleep thing we got to get better at. Right. You know, and there's my oldest son has told me there's a wrap. You wear a mouthpiece and a wrap that holds your jaw in. And he's trying that kind of thing. And I was like, oh my God,
you know, you go to bed half mummified.
Totally. Just hold that jaw in there. I have been practicing. I've been trying to do this. I've been thinking about, before I go to sleep, of holding my jaw in place. I wear retainers.
Yeah, I've got one too.
And I've been trying to hold, they won't hold my mouth together, but I've been trying to practice as I'm going to sleep. Not clinching, but just holding the jaw, like, in this spot. But listen, I'm afraid to death to fall asleep on my back because I'm afraid I'll choke to death. You know, you're like, I'm pretty sure if I fall asleep on my back, I'm going to die. You know, I'm just going to die, you know. And listen, for you and me, like, there's the other thing, gentlemen. I mean, there's the other thing about weight, right? I mean, both of us. Well, maybe
what
not
you. What are you trying to say, Jim?
Maybe not you, but I could definitely.
You call me fat or what?
Well, not you, but maybe me and maybe you. We could do better. We could do better in that space.
I look back to when I got married. If I put it into American speak, I'm about 40 pounds heavier than I was when I got married.
Yeah, for sure.
That's, you know, that's part and parcel I mean, my case, it's some of the meds I'm on to stop migraines and stuff like that. But,
yeah, for sure.
You know, everything can be overcome with exercise and not eating having a shit diet too.
It's really just not eating. That's the key. Like, at our age, the exercise doesn't matter as much. It's just, we don't need to jam as much stuff in our pie hole. You know, it's just like tonight I was like chili. Oh yeah, I gotta have that. I gotta have those cinnamon rolls to go with the chili.
Yeah, because I would decide to go together.
You know, you're like, well, I could have walked away. I could have just walked away. Oh, what fun is it in that? Andrew, anything coming up? Is you're thinking about anything coming up in your future that you're thinking about, from you're excited about, from a tech perspective? You got it, or are you keeping an eye on any kind of tech gadget here in the future? I mean, the tech future is bleak just because everything's super expensive, but any thoughts? What's going on in the future?
Oh yeah, I desperately want a 3D printer.
Oh, I am so on again, off again on 3D printers. What would you? Why? Let me ask you why. What do you think you're going to print on that thing that's going to make a difference?
I don't know. Print myself a new partner some days, I think.
yeah, for sure.
I've got two kids. who are you know, using Blender at school and you know, designing stuff and whatnot. So you know, this day and age, I think for them it'd be something that they would use. But I find more and more at work that I have a need to make like a custom bracket for something or a holder for something else or you know, that type of thing.
But don't you think you can just go to Etsy and or whatever and get somebody else to print it for you and just ship it to you?
Yeah, but where's the fun in that though?
I know, but it's just you need it. Like I need, you know, I put up these permanent lights outside the house, right? You know, they've gotten real industrial now. They're about that big. Yep. And what I need is I don't want to put permanent, I don't want to drill those things permanently into my siding. And so what I used was wood shims, you know, like you would use in a construction. And I just attached them to the wood shims and then slid them in. And I always thought, okay, in the spring, I'm going to come back and I needed bigger shims. The shims I used were too small, and so they don't shine the way they want them to. And I thought, you know, that'd be the perfect 3D printed device. Like, finally, I have something I need. And then I'm like, would I really buy a $800 3D printer to print 15 of these things and then never print anything again?
You know? But if no one else is selling them on your Etsy's.
No, they totally are. I can find these anywhere. Yeah. Listen, on Etsy for this 3D printed stuff, everything's been invented already. If you're thinking about it, somebody else has, and you can just buy it.
Yeah, I'm purely thinking about it just to screw around, really.
Right on. Right on.
But, you know, the other day at work, I mean, I had to install 3 Mac minis running an application called AppSpace, which does your corporate rah-rah across multiple TV screens, and they're sitting, I've got a gap that's like 4 inches, and at the moment I've got a power board lying in there upside down, and I've got 3 Mac minis standing up side by side on this power board. It looks shit, right?
And I'll
fabricate something not out of plastic and it'll do the job, but to be able to just design it, print it, and walk in and go, hey, look what I built for this custom purpose.
Yeah, you got. Do you have one in mind? Do you have one in mind? Have you been looking at any of them?
Yeah, probably. I think this day and age, you got to go Bamboo Lab.
Yeah,
They're the Apple of 3D printing. Oop. You still there?
See, oop. It happened. It happened. there it goes. I spoke it into existence and it happened. They're the Apple, right? You were saying.
Oh, they're the Apple of 3D printing. Creality is probably the Android of 3D printing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Prusa, I think, has just shot himself in the foot because he's arrogant. But yeah, look, I would probably, I think, look at maybe a H2S or an H2D. As much as the new tool changer one is very appealing, there's a lot of problems I'm reading about it. So really, I don't want to buy something that's in a beta phase that's gone to market.
Right. Yeah, Dave McCabe's been on, and he's got the Bamboo Labs, and I think it's probably just the way to go. you know, we're gonna.
He's big on it. I mean, he probably uses it to complement his woodwork stuff, and doesn't he?
No, for sure. Yeah, he's got that mind though. This is where I always thought, like, yeah, I could use one of these. I'm not a designer. Like, I just can't do that. That stuff doesn't. I'm like, can I have somebody else design it? Like, it'd be really cool if I could buy it from you. You know, that's the best design I have is when I buy it from somebody else. Like, I just don't have that kind of money.
Or you give them the concept and they come up with it for you.
Yeah. Well, I got to find those bamboo, not the bamboo lamps, but I got to find those shims that hold the lights for that. And then I'll have somebody print those for me and we'll get them done. Well, Andrew, our time is up here. Great to have you. Great to have you. Great to connect with you. Thanks for being my friend over the last 15, 16 years as we've kind of lived life together. And
it's been a pretty wild trip. I mean, I know we got invited to your wedding anniversary and couldn't make the stars align, but that would have been pretty cool. That would have been epic.
That would have been epic if you would have. Yeah, my kids threw that for our 25th. We're coming up on 30 something this year, and it's a lot. It's a lot of years.
It's a lot of years conspiring against your children, isn't it?
I know. It's surprising. It's surprising. we're still, one of us hasn't killed each other in the process. I'm fully expecting a pillow over my head. Just hold it down and make sure I make. So if I disappear, friends, listen to the podcast. You guys know what's happened. She snuck.
Yeah, consider this to be Jim's weekly proof of life. Exactly.
That's why I keep podcasting. It's proof of life. Not a bad proof of life, actually. So good stuff. Andrew, can you hang on while I close this thing up? All right. Yeah. Couple reminders on the way out. If you're listening to the podcast side of things or on YouTube there, if you want to join the Discord group, you can do that. theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Lots of great conversation. Not super busy and not a huge commitment, but deals get posted there and we have some conversations about kind of like what we had tonight. We've had some Ubiquity or some Unify conversations going on lately or whatever. Join that Discord group. Just jump in there and we'll let you in as well. And then don't forget the averageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, still powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from folks that you know and you trust. That's Christian. I asked him the other day, plans still $10, Christian? He goes, still $10. So if you want to fight inflation, his prices aren't going, RAM prices, CPU prices, GPU prices, all going up. Not Maple Grove Partners. Well, I shouldn't say they're going down. They're staying the same. And so check it out today, maplegrovepartners.com. And I'll remind you, if you're out there, big thanks to our Patreon subscribers as well. Appreciate you guys and what you do every single month. And if you're purchasing on Amazon, go out to theaverageguy.tv and just click through the Amazon link that's there. Rather than trying to embed all those links in the show notes, the world-class show notes, as we used to call them, just click on the link. It's just easier that way, and it benefits the networks, and we appreciate it as well. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you're a regular listener, you know Erin Lawrence was on a couple weeks ago. We had her coming in from L.A., and then we lost her midway through the show. She's coming back and will be with us next week. And so come out and join us for 672. Andrew Morris, always great to catch up with you. Thanks again for coming on tonight and being part of the show for the last 15 years. Appreciate you. Make sure you pass that on to Michelle as well and your kids. For those listening live, stay around for a few minutes of a post-show. With that, we'll say goodbye.
Where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.